I'd never really been this close to a horse that, you know, wasn't moving up and down on a pole and going around in circles. Russell just smiled. I'm actually the third man to try and help this mare. Somehow, I always seem to find myself with the horses that everybody else has given up on. As a stranger who spoke cryptically about horses, Russell probably should have made me more leery than I was. It's hard to explain, but he gave off a warmth that made me feel comfortable and secure. He had all of the dirt of every farm on earth on him, yet somehow or another he felt clean and peaceful. Talking to Russell felt like talking to somebody I'd known my whole life.
So, you just gave her an apple?
No, Eddie. I just needed to show her that I love her. Horses have to be reminded of that sometimes. This old girl, she's been through some tough stuff, and everybody gave up on her. She'd been beaten and felt abandoned. I'm just trying to help her see that she's wrong.
How do you do that?
Well, it may kind of sound funny, but I just try to remind her of who she is. You know, these horses are trained day after day to forget their instincts and their emotions that they were born with. Everybody wants to feel loved. But when all you feel is alone, it's tough to accomplish anything else. He was losing me.
A horse can feel lonely?
Of course they can. In fact, horses are more like us than you think. They're born knowing what they're supposed to become, but they don't know who they are or how they got here. I bet it's the same with you, Eddie. People probably ask you all the time, what do you want to be when you grow up? But that's the wrong question now, isn't it? I mean, that's like saying this horse is a workhorse instead of saying what she really is. Good, gentle, faithful. See the difference? The what doesn't matter. The question people really should ask is, who do you want to be when you grow up? Oh, boy. I still didn't get it.
Who do I want to be? You mean, like Joe Namath or Evel Knievel?
No, not exactly, Russell smiled. His voice didn't show a hint of irritation that I didn't understand what he was trying to say.
I mean, who do you want to be? What kind of person do you want to become? Oh, I want to be rich. I want to live far away from here. I'm going to have a huge house someplace like in New York City. I'm going to buy the fanciest car, a new TV, and everything else I want.
Wow, Russell said, turning to face the horse.
Wow, sounds like you've got it all figured out. Oh, I do. I just have to get away from here and all the people who are trying to drag me down.
Russell paused for a moment and stroked the mare's head.
So, you got it all figured out. Then you must know who you are.
Yeah, I already told you. I'm Eddie.
No, I don't mean it like that. I'm sure you already know this, Eddie, but Russell played to my ego. Most people, they're just not like you. Most people don't know what they're going to do or where they're even going to live or what tomorrow holds. They just keep moving. They hope that the next move or the next job or the next day, they'll just be happy. But a guy like you, a guy like you gets it. That's why you've been able to make such a great plan. I didn't understand exactly why I was getting so many compliments, but I liked them.
You bet. I got it all mapped out.
Good for you. You know, people are meant to be happy, Eddie, but sometimes it's hard to do if you've allowed yourself to become somebody that you're not. Ah, now I was starting to understand what he was talking about.
Yeah, my grandfather's like that. He's so busy convincing himself that he's happy, he didn't even know how many things he doesn't have.
Really? Russell said. He seemed genuinely interested.
Yeah, I used to think he was cool and fun, but now I know exactly who he is. He's an old man who's fooled himself into thinking that he's successful. He can't even see that you'll never find happiness on a street full of farmers and simple-minded people. He can have so much more than a stupid little berry farm. There's a whole world out there, but he's trapped with a bunch of dead-enders, bad memories, and outdated ways.
I could tell by the way Russell was listening that he knew exactly what I was talking about. I felt smart showing him how much I knew and sharing the things that my grandparents would never understand. I was just kind of surprised that someone who looked like Russell got it. But he did.
Boy, I am sorry to hear that about your grandparents, Russell replied sympathetically. It's too bad they can't learn a little something from somebody like you, somebody who knows what he wants and goes out and gets it. And you know, you'll succeed because you understand that the who will always lead you to happiness. After that, the what and the where just fall into place. If your grandparents would ever figure that out, they might just be as happy as you are. Maybe they'd even be as successful as you'll be.
Russell paused for a moment and turned to the horse.
Of course, this old girl will figure it out just as soon as I remind her that she's loved.
I ignored the horse.
I'm plenty happy,
I protested, feeling compelled to reinforce an already stated fact. And my grandparents tell me all the time that they love me.
Oh, I'm sure. I didn't know we were talking about you.
We aren't. I was just saying.
Oh, sure, sure. You know, Eddie, you seem like a smart kid. Let me ask your advice on something.
Okay.
I played it cool, but I was actually happy that Russell already thought that much of me.
Well, I've come a long way with this horse, but I still can't get her to trust me completely.
He pulled another slice of apple out of his pocket and brought it up to the mare's nose. Her head flinched back violently. Russell just held the apple slice steady, and the horse cautiously brought her head forward and took the apple in her mouth.
I told you she's been through some tough stuff, Russell said, but actually it goes much deeper than that. When she was born, her owners raised her on a farm with a bunch of other horses. Then the farm got sold and the new owners were hardly ever around.
Russell turned back around to face me. He was almost as good of a storyteller as Grandpa.
They hired somebody to care for the animals, but he was a mean old guy. He was more interested in abusing the horses than feeding or grooming them.
I pictured the gentle horse that stood in front of me being mistreated. It made me angry. I wanted to help her. Anyway, Russell continued, one day, an older horse on the farm got sick, and instead of nursing her back to health, the caretaker just grabbed his rifle and killed it right in front of this poor girl. Imagine that, Eddie, seeing your friend killed for no reason right in front of your eyes. Flashes of bright lights and loud sirens filled my head. My father, frail and sick in the hospital bed, Mom, tired and angry behind the wheel of our car. A few months later, a bad storm blew down part of the fence around the corral. A horse's instincts took over, and they all ran for freedom through the breach in that fence. That's when I found her, scared, alone in the woods. I looked back at the mare with a new level of appreciation. I wanted to see about buying her, so I went over to the caretaker. He made me an offer I couldn't refuse, and I've been nursing her back to health ever since. Russell turned back towards her and pulled out another piece of apple. Unfortunately, this old girl's had such a bad experience that she's never trusted another human. The mare's head flinched again. I show her love every single day. But I think, in her mind at least, she equates it with fear. So, anyway, Eddie, I guess I could use your advice. How do I get her to realize that not everybody wants to hurt her? I'd gotten so engrossed in the story that I'd forgotten Russell was looking for my help. I struggled and tried to think of something to say.
Well, I don't know. I guess you just have to stick with what you're doing. I'm sure she'll eventually see what happened to her wasn't her fault, and, you know, you're her friend.
I was embarrassed I didn't have any more to offer, but Russell apparently thought my answer was better than I did. His face brightened. You know, Eddie, you're exactly right. I've just got to keep at it. Thanks. I was glowing inside, but I didn't want to press my luck.
Well, my grandparents are probably expecting me,
I said as I jumped down from the fence and walked away quickly.
Come by again, Eddie. Come by again, Russell offered.
I didn't have to say I would. That night, I snuck downstairs again to watch Johnny Carson. As I came around the corner of the living room, I saw that it was lit with the flickering greenish tint of the television. My grandfather sat on the coffee table, his nose nearly touching the screen.
Grandpa?
Shh,
he said with his finger to his lips. Then he slid over on the table, leaving just enough room for me. I sat next to him as we watched together in silence, wanting to laugh, but afraid to be discovered by Grandma. I could feel the hardness of his strong arm against my skinny one. For one showing of El Dorado, the warm feelings that we had last shared long ago were back. Grandpa didn't know it, but even though I was looking at the TV, I was really watching the story of the last year replay in my mind. I wanted to go back, but I didn't know how. So instead, I just sat there. Chapter 11.
I need your help today, Grandpa said cheerfully over breakfast the next morning. After we ate and cleared our dishes, he led me to the smaller of the two barns. The left half had been cleaned up and turned into storage for Grandma's craft supplies. She was always knitting or quilting or sewing something. What was now my room had once been Grandma's old sewing room, so when I moved in, Grandpa had moved all of her stuff out here to his workshop. The right half of the barn was still Grandpa's. The border between neatness and clutter separated the two areas just as well as any wall would have. He took me to the far corner of the barn and pulled an old sheet off what looked to me like a pile of scrap lumber.
"What are we doing, Grandpa?"
"Building your grandma's Christmas gift," he answered. "Of course, it's a secret," he added in a tone of mock warning. I had completely forgotten. Christmas was just a month away. I couldn't believe that it had snuck up on me like that. Probably because it had been such an unseasonably warm winter so far. Growing up, I'd always been jealous of Grandma and Grandpa, because they'd always gotten so much more snow than we had. Even though we didn't live that far away, the rain-snow line on the weatherman's map always seemed to run right between us. There had been plenty of storms where we'd been flooded and they had snowdrifts up to the top of their porch. There had been times when I'd imagined myself running away and moving in with them just to get more snow days off from school. I pictured Grandpa and me getting up early, making a snow fort in the front yard, drinking hot chocolate all day. Grandpa probably wouldn't even make me wear my bread bag boots, I'd thought. It seemed like a dream. But now, I was living that dream and realizing just how wrong I had been. Sure, there had been no bread bag boots, but there also wasn't any snow. Not one inch. There hadn't been all year.
"Things aren't always what they seem," Taylor's voice replayed in my mind.
Grandpa handed me some sandpaper and pointed to a stack of carefully cut pieces of wood that were arranged on the floor in his work table.
"These need to be smooth as a rock from the stream. Start with a coarse paper and work your way down to the fine black paper. I've got a few more pieces to cut."
This is the last thing I felt like doing.
"What are we making?"
I asked, hoping I'd be able to figure out a shortcut that didn't involve sandpaper.
"I don't know. I think it'd be more fun if I didn't tell you," Grandpa replied. "Maybe you can guess when we start to put it together."
He was being coy, probably because he knew why I was asking.
"Grandpa, why don't you just go out and buy her something instead?" I suggested. "I'm sure she'd rather have something new from a store."
My grandfather looked at me like he had never seen me before.
"No, she wouldn't. Besides, it makes you happier when you focus on making other people happy."
There were my mother's words in my grandfather's voice. He left me sitting alone on a stool. I sanded for a while, but stopped when my hands began to cramp. It was obvious I'd never be a craftsman. The regular sounds coming from the other corner of the barn told me that Grandpa was now busy and not coming to check on me anytime soon, so I began to explore. Taylor and I had snuck in a couple of times before, but I'd always been afraid that my grandfather would somehow know that we'd been in there. It was the only place on the entire farm that I was forbidden to go. I crossed over to the tidy side and began to look through my grandmother's things. There were flowers drying on a potting bench and what looked like a sewing machine museum along the wall. There was an old Singer powered by a foot pedal connected by a leather belt and a big metal wheel. I was so intrigued by how it worked, I didn't notice that the workshop had fallen silent. Next to the old sewing machines was a set of shelves that my grandfather had obviously made by hand. They were packed with extra fabric and half-finished quilts, bolts of pajamas and shirt fabric, yarn and knitting supplies. One particular ball of yarn caught my attention. I picked it up.
As I ran a strand of it between my fingers, it was rough and soft at the same time. My grandfather came and stood next to me.
Some of this was your mother's. She was knitting by the time she was 8. She looked so funny. The needles were almost as long as her arms.
As he talked, I remembered Mom knitting my Christmas sweater every night, right there in front of me. I looked up at him with dry eyes.
I'm not very good at sanding.
That's okay, Eddie. There are some things I'm not very good at either. For instance, I'm pretty rusty at raising kids. Your grandmother did most of the work with your mom, and when you came along, I thought having a grandson was going to be fun and easy, and I was right, at least for a while.
Memories of fishing trips and ice cream cones and rigged card games flashed through my mind. It had been so long since we'd done any of the fun things we used to. Things were different now. Grandpa paused as if he was trying to collect himself. When he spoke again, his voice was lower and unsteady.
Son, you and I are very much the same. We're stubborn. We always want to show people how wrong they are, how we don't need anybody but ourselves. Well, I want you to know how wrong I was. I was trying to teach you a lesson, and instead I missed what was right in front of me. Your mom was too tired to drive that night, and I made a mistake, and I'll regret it till the day I die.
I wanted so much to just drop the yarn in my hands and wrap my arms around Grandpa. I wanted so badly for things to be the way they were before. I thought about what Russell had told me. Did Grandpa really even know who he was? Was he really happy? Could he be feeling as lonely and abandoned as I was?
Before I could say anything, Grandpa went on.
Sometimes our strengths are also our weaknesses. Sometimes to be strong, you first have to be weak. You have to share your burdens. You have to lean on other people
while you face your problems and yourself. It's hard to do, but your family is there to provide a shelter from the storms that come in everybody's life. The yarn suddenly felt alive in my hands. I imagined Mom finishing my sweater, cutting the last bit off with her teeth. She must have been so proud. Then I saw my mother staring at that sweater rolled up in a ball on my bedroom floor. The thought of it brought back a rash of emotions, none of them good. I focused on my grandfather. Then, once again, I pushed him away.
I don't want any help, I spat. Everybody I've ever loved has been taken from me, and I'm not going to let that happen again. I don't need anyone. I know who I am, and I'm not like you, and I never will be. I'm going to be rich. I won't have to be cheap with a woman I claim to love and make her a present. I'm going to buy her a real present. My kids will have what they need.
I threw the yarn down as if it had been a snake and turned to run. My grandfather stepped in front of me and clamped his hands around my shoulders. I knew that struggling wouldn't do any good, so I just struck as defiant of a pose as I could and stared straight ahead, right into his chest. Look at me. I didn't move my head. I just rolled my eyes up until I was looking into his. First of all, I love you, Eddie. And I'm not going anywhere, and neither is your grandmother.
You can't promise that,
I protested. I couldn't let him in.
You don't know.
I didn't even hear the first part of what he said.
You're right. I don't know. But you can't live the rest of your life in fear and guilt and anger forever. Like it or not, life is a series of events that we don't always understand or appreciate.
What happened to your mother isn't your fault, and it isn't mine. It was an accident. Just a stupid accident. I was right on the verge of a complete breakdown. All of the hurt, all of the pain, all of the memories just wanted to burst through at once.
Eddie, Grandpa continued, I think you have a basic misunderstanding of what you want and what you need. We don't always get what we want. But the things that you've wanted lately, you certainly don't need.
My swirling emotions turned directly into anger.
I said the most hurtful thing I could think of. So, I guess I don't need a mom or dad then.
I was trying to trap him, hoping that he would lash out at me.
It would have been easier for both of us if we had just stopped talking, but Grandpa wasn't going to be played that easy. Eddie, we can't control what happens to us, but we can control how we react to it. We're all meant to be happy. Even you, Eddie. As hard as it is for you to believe it sometimes, you're meant to be happy. And if you're not happy, it's not God's fault. It's not my fault. It's not anybody else's fault. It's your own. Those words lit a fire inside of me. I rushed to put it out before it could melt the coldness that I had come to depend on when I felt threatened by kindness. You're only trying to make excuses for God and for yourself. I'm not happy because of me? Really? Where was God when Mom couldn't even keep food in the house? Where were you when Mom was spending every free minute turning that yarn into the only gift she could afford? I thought family was supposed to take care of family. You're out of line, son. He let go of me like I had let go of the yarn. No, I'm not. I'm right, and you know it. I sensed something building inside of Grandpa that I hadn't expected. Fear? Guilt? I didn't know, but I wasn't about to back down. He took a step back from me and put a hand on a shelf full of yarn to steady himself. He considered me for a few seconds. I could tell that he was making an important decision. Everyone was trying to help you too, Eddie. But your mom always refused it. We aren't rich, mind you, but we could have done more than she let us. She wanted to take care of you herself. She felt like a hand up was the same as a hand out, and she didn't want any of that. She didn't want to feel like she had failed. Well, she was wrong. She was stubborn. I guess the two of you have more in common than I thought. Even though I had spent my childhood wearing bread bag boots to school, I'd really never had any idea just how much my parents had struggled. It wasn't until after my mother died that I began to piece it all together. Let me show you something. Grandpa squeezed between the sewing machines and the shelving and into the corner of Grandma's part of the barn. I followed him, and we stood next to each other in front of a green canvas tarp. It smelled like camping. He looked at me again as if he still wasn't sure whether he should say or do what he was about to. After what seemed like an eternity, he finally said, "Your mother didn't know about this. She wouldn't have liked it. She would have thought it was too much." He grabbed the center of the tarp and pulled it away. A brand new Huffy. I was speechless. It was the gift that I had wished for, but had never gotten. Bright red with a black vinyl banana seat and big, curved chrome handlebars. My gaze shifted down to the tires. 20 playing cards had been placed into the spokes of each wheel to make a custom clicking sound as the wheels turned. I recognized the cards immediately as being from my grandpa's favorite deck. No wonder he wouldn't play with me that day, I thought. My guilt multiplied. I couldn't move. My mind was a tangled mess of thoughts and memories and emotions. Grandpa finally broke the silence. "See, Eddie, sometimes the gift you want most is right in front of you, but you just have to get out of your own way to receive it." I couldn't speak, but the expression on my face said more than I ever could. Grandpa continued. "Grandma knew that I had taught you some of my present hunting tricks, so she wouldn't let me hide this anywhere in the house. We planned to give it to you as soon as we were done with the other gifts. Then you gave your mother a hard time about staying over, and I wanted to teach you a lesson." Grandpa's words trailed off as tears escaped from his eyes and slowly rolled down his cheeks. Grandpa was crying. "Son, if I thought something as simple as a bike could make you happy, I would have given this to you a long time ago. But a bike can't. No material thing can. You just have to find your way back to the things that'll give you lasting happiness. Things you can't buy in a store." I heard Grandpa speaking, but I was transfixed on the Huffy. I couldn't take my eyes off it. I felt like it might just disappear like everything else good in my life. "See, Eddie, you're not alone. You never were. We didn't abandon you or your mother, and we never will." I felt like speaking, but I couldn't move my mouth. Everything I had made myself believe was turning out to be wrong, and I wasn't prepared to face that. Grandpa went on. I have some if-onlys about that day, too. If only I hadn't taught you how to hunt for presents. If only I hadn't tried to teach you a lesson. If I only had demanded that you stay. If only I had given you the bike. If only I hadn't been so stubborn.
I slowly shifted my gaze from the bicycle to my grandfather. His eyes were red, wet, and very tired. I considered him, and felt the now familiar crush of emotions weighing on me, begging me to cave in and fall into his strong arms. But I pushed back with every ounce of energy I had left. Every time I trusted someone, I got hurt. Every time I let go, I was let down. Not again. I would drive them away before they left. I steadied myself and looked deep into my grandfather's eyes. You gave me that big speech about God and happiness before, but look at you. You're not happy. You've been fooling everybody for the last year, but not me. I see right through you. I wasn't about to let go of my guilt and my anger so easily, and I certainly wasn't about to share it with a person who I had convinced myself was causing most of it. Grandpa looked stunned. I went for the knockout punch. Mom would be alive if it wasn't for you making us leave that day. Now it was Grandpa's turn to be speechless. I sensed his vulnerability, and it made me even stronger. You can go to church all you want, but none of the people there are really happy, so stop your preaching. Stop telling me, oh, God is with us, or how we're the perfect little family, because it's all a lie. I was virtually shouting now. Do you know why it's a lie? Because there is no God. Jesus doesn't love you. Jesus doesn't care. My words hung in the air as if caught in the dusty rafters of the old barn. Tears once again began to run down my grandfather's cheeks. I went in for the kill. I'm the only real one in the family. I know who I am. I'll be happy when I'm far away from here, when I don't have to worry about other people doing stupid things, like making their tired daughter drive. I ran from the barn with unseen tears running down my cheeks. My grandfather was left alone with a bicycle and the yarn of 100 unmade sweaters. I stared at my bedroom ceiling, its smooth white plaster standing in stark contrast to the cracked, water-stained ceiling of my bedroom at home. Home, where I belonged. I felt like I should be crying, but I couldn't. I wasn't sad. I thought about the bike, all that it symbolized, hope, happiness, death, and despair. Grandpa's words flashed through my head. You have to share your burdens. You have to lean on other people. We're all meant to be happy. Oh, those were nice sentiments. But they were just words. And I was done with talking. My snowball had just grown too large. Russell was right. Figuring out the who would lead me to the what and where. And now I had all three answers. My grandparents' farm was the what, and it was part of the who I used to be. Now, soon it would be time to show everybody the where. I got up from my bed and went over to the dresser. It had 5 drawers, only 4 of which I ever used. My sweater was in the 5th drawer, at the very bottom. It was the only thing in there. A mirror hung on the wall just over the dresser, but I avoided looking myself in the eyes. Something inside of me was telling me I was going down the wrong road and that I needed to start over with my grandparents, but I ignored it. It was easy to fool other people, but for some reason, the mirror made it harder and harder to fool myself. I took the sweater out. I held it to my nose. I took a deep breath of my mother. I felt completely and utterly lost. My old life and the old me were gone, and she was gone with it. I was filled with regret. I never even had a chance to say goodbye. Chapter 12. My grandfather wasted no time in picking up right where we had left off in the barn. After breakfast the next morning, he followed me into the living room as Grandma cleared the dishes. "Who do you think you're hurting?" he asked with a carefully controlled voice. Yesterday's old, tired eyes were now steely blue. "I'm just trying to get out of here." "Well, that's not going to happen.
You're going to be here for a good while. I told you that yesterday. I'm not going anywhere. And, son, neither are you. In the meantime, you and I need to come to an understanding. And this isn't negotiable. You will obey me and respect your grandmother. She's the kindest, gentlest, most giving person you'll ever meet. She has suffered enough. I can handle all your selfish hatred, but I swear, if you break that woman's heart, you are going to have to answer to me. I looked into the kitchen. Grandma's back was to us as she worked over the sink. For an instant, I felt guilty for adding to her burden. It passed quickly.
Just stay out of my way and I'll stay out of yours, I snorted. That's not going to work, Eddie. I'm going to love you no matter how much you fight me. I wish it wasn't that way. I'd much rather laugh and go get ice cream at the hardware store again. I want Grandma to ask us, where have you been for the last 3 hours? I want to show you the rest of the Christmas hiding spots I found over the years. But most of all, I want my best friend back again.
I couldn't believe it. Another lecture. And he wasn't done. If you want to keep going down this self-pity path, that's your choice. But it's the wrong one. Either way, I'm not moving on. I will always be here with open arms, ready to show you how good life can be if you'll just let someone else into it. But until that time, I will be watching you like a hawk. You don't fool me, Eddie. I understand you better than you understand yourself.
Yeah, well, watch me all you want. I don't care. Maybe you'll learn something. Besides, there's only one person around here who even comes close to understanding me, and it isn't you.
Grandpa looked confused for a second, then glanced into the kitchen.
It's not Grandma,
I answered with more contempt than I felt.
I'm talking about Russell.
Who?
Russell, the man who lives next door.
Eddie, I don't know what you think you're doing, but you can stop with this Russell nonsense. I went over there with a couple of neighbors a few times, and we haven't seen anybody, nor any sign that the Johnsons ever sold the place.
Well, then you obviously don't all know each other as well as you thought. Russell lives there, and he gets it. He knows who I am.
Grandpa glared at me.
I don't even know you anymore, Eddie. I don't know if you really saw somebody, or if you're making all of this up as part of some sort of escape plot that you've hatched. If that's the case, it's not going to work. Either way, stay away from the Johnson farm. You have no business going over there without me.
Fine, I replied, though I knew it was anything but. In that instant, I realized how far my relationship with my grandfather had deteriorated. He couldn't even trust his own grandson anymore. In what had become my normal routine, I did exactly the opposite of what my grandfather told me to do. I walked to the Johnson's farm, through the scrub and past the corral. The mare was outside. She watched me go by and greeted me with a snort and a flick of her tail. The same horse that had been so ornery before was now so gentle. It was like a completely different horse. The bottom step leading to the porch was gone, and I had to half-jump to reach the next step. Once on the porch, I stopped and listened to the tarnished copper wind chime hanging near the door. A gentle breeze forced it to surrender a few clicks and a couple of unimpressive tones. I wondered if I should just turn around and go home. What home? The torn screen door opened with a squeak as the spring stretched out for the millionth time. I hesitated and then quietly knocked on the door. Small chips of ancient paint came away with my knuckle. I reached out to try again, thinking there was no way anyone could have heard my knock. Then a gentle voice came from behind me.
Hello, Eddie.
I should have been startled, but I wasn't.
Hi, Russell. I was just going to take a break. Come and sit with me for a while.
He led me through the tall, dead grass to a big tree with a park bench underneath. A real park bench. It still had the faded advertisement for the yellow pages.
Auction, he said simply, answering my question before I asked it. This is where I come to think after more than just my fingers have done the walking, he smiled. Everyone needs a place where they can just go and ponder for a while.
Silence is important.
It's the only time you can hear the whispering of truth. I wasn't sure how to respond, so I didn't say anything. Russell let out a deep breath. It's funny, he continued, his voice barely audible. Funny how many people just look at the surface and never ponder the deeper meanings of things. I guess maybe it's easier that way, because when you skim the surface, you blame your problems on the first person you find, and that's never yourself. He paused, as if to underscore what he had just said. Maybe that's why people aren't comfortable with silence. Silence makes you think. And thinking makes you realize not all the problems are caused by somebody else. Russell had his eyes closed. I was sure he'd sit there in silence for a month if I waited for him to speak again. The silence was awkward and uncomfortable. "Aren't you afraid your horse is going to run away?" I asked. "Your broken fence sure isn't going to keep her here." Russell kept his eyes closed as he considered my question. "If you treat an animal right, they don't run away. They're not like us. They run away from people they don't trust. Most times, we run away from ourselves." More silence. "I suppose I'm about done with this old girl," Russell continued. "I think she's pretty much remembered who she is. And she is happy. There's not much more for me to do. I'll probably give her a few more days, and then I'll be hitting the road again." Figures, I thought to myself. Everyone else I've ever been close to is left. Why wouldn't Russell? He lifted his head and looked deep into my eyes. It felt as if he was looking through me. "What can I do for you, Eddie?"
"Nothing. I just came over to say hello."
Lying was becoming second nature to me. Russell turned his head and picked up a small stick from between his feet.
"You know, Eddie, sometimes we get so entangled in life that we miss the obvious. We just get so caught up in our own problems that most of the time we fail to see what's..."
I finished the sentence almost by rote.
"Right under our nose?"
"Yeah. We fail to see the things that are closest to us. It's like the old expression, you can't see the forest for the trees. You're in the forest right now, Eddie, but you're too close to the trees to realize it. Maybe you need to step back a bit and see the big picture." I nodded my head in agreement, and I knew Russell would understand. He always seemed to know exactly what I planned on doing, seeing the whole picture by getting as far away from this godforsaken street as possible. Russell continued, "See, we're all made up of two parts. There's the part that thinks, and then there's the part that feels. Usually, the two parts work together and everything's fine, but sometimes life hits us hard, and one overtakes the other. For example, you miss your dad terribly, right?" I wondered how he knew about my dad, but at that point I was more curious about where he was heading.
"Sure,"
I answered cautiously.
"Well, you think about him plenty. But how often do you remember the feelings you had when he was around? When you think about him now, you picture him in a hospital bed or a casket at his funeral. You've replaced dreams with nightmares."
It was hard to argue that. I looked at the horse.
"You've done the same thing with your mother. You've replaced good memories of pancakes and laughter with bad memories of an argument and a car wreck. You've got to stop thinking so much, and instead start feeling again, even when..."
He paused, then said,
"No, especially when it hurts."
A vision of Mom laying in her casket involuntarily popped into my head, as it had done so many times before. But now, for the first time since her death, I was able to force it out and replace it with how I felt. I felt happiness and warmth, joy and sorrow. But most of all, I felt a longing to see her again. For the first time, I felt how much I missed her.
"Eddie, your parents did a
good job trying to teach you how to live your life. They showed you that no matter what happened, all would be well in the end. But look what you've done with those lessons. You've crumpled them up into a ball and tossed them on the floor.
I looked away again. I knew he was right.
You're not living in the present, Eddie. You're living in the past. Life here is to be shaped and molded into what you want it to be.
But you've done exactly the opposite. You've let life shape and mold you. You don't know who you really are, because right now, you're no one. You're empty inside.
What? I was fuming. How could Russell even say that? I knew exactly who I was. I was about to remind him of that, but Russell wasn't interested in any of my feedback. He continued. The two most powerful words in any language are I am. Those two words contain all the creative power of the heavens themselves. It was God's answer from the burning bush to Moses' question. Who shall I say sent me? I am that I am. It's the name of God.
I don't believe in God. Russell considered me for a moment.
He's sorry to hear that. Maybe it's because you've invoked his name to create something that you're not. A reality that exists only because you've made it so.
I didn't even know what he was talking about. He must have seen the confusion in my face.
Eddie, when was the last time you honestly thought, I am happy? I am strong. I am a good person. I am worthy.
His voice was powerful, commanding. My silence said more than I ever could.
You've spent far too much of your time turning yourself into something that you're not. A victim. No one can make you into a victim. Only you can do that. And you have.
But there's another choice that you can make as well. You can choose to be a survivor. A flood of memories came rushing back to me. Dad trying to teach me how to fly a kite in the street outside our house. Every time he'd get it going, another car would come around the corner and the kite would nosedive into the asphalt. I tried to push it away. Dad and I playing football in the backyard. He'd throw the ball so far that I'd have to run to the neighbor's yard to catch it.
Feel, Eddie. Feel.
Dad and I walking down the middle of the street in the snow, the street lights making his face glow. Suddenly I felt a pit in my stomach.
Don't think yet, son. Feel.
Dad's face glowing again, but now it was under the bright white lights of the hospital room. He looked so tired and frail. A flash of darkness. I was at his funeral. By his counsel's guide, uphold you, with his sheep securely fold you. God be with you till we meet again. As hard as I tried, I couldn't feel. I was inundated with thoughts, wave after wave, memory after memory. I couldn't fight it anymore. It all seemed so overwhelming. I am not. I let go. Russell had his back to me. The horse was eating gently from his hand.
You have such a bright future, he said. You just have to believe in it.
I think it's time for me to go home.
Russell never turned around.
Oh, that it is, Eddie. That it is.
This time I didn't say anything to Grandpa about Russell. It didn't really matter. We stopped talking any more than we absolutely had to. He decided that everything I did was selfish and manipulative, and his growing distrust gave me the excuse I needed to be the bitter and disrespectful 13-year-old that I was beginning to believe that I really was. Rather than faking a normal, happy relationship, we set in motion a nasty cycle that was sucking every ounce of goodness right out of our home. Grandma deserved better. It's not that Grandpa was ever mean to me. He just quit trying to be nice. Maybe he was just waiting for me to grow up, or maybe he had just had enough of it all. But whatever the reason, Grandpa answered my constant abuse with indifference. Harsh words and restricted privileges were reserved for when I broke the rules or crossed the line by taking my anger out on my grandmother.
Unable to get sympathy at home, I looked for it at the Ashtons instead.
"I can't stay there anymore, Taylor," I said over lunch at school one day.
"Where will you go?"
he asked, just as I had hoped.
"If I could just take a break for a while, you know, maybe things would settle down."
"Let's talk to my folks," he offered.
Ah, oh, finally.
Chapter 13. School let out 10 days before the holiday because Christmas fell on a Sunday. Grandpa had gone on his annual 3-day hunting trip a little later than normal, which gave me the perfect opportunity to finally put my plan into motion.
"Grandma, would you mind if I stayed over at Taylor's house for a few nights? His parents already said it was okay."
Grandpa would have never allowed this, but Grandma was a softy. She was still under the mistaken impression that I could be saved, and I used that against her. To my surprise, she didn't answer right away. I started to worry that I might have miscalculated.
"Well, Grandpa wouldn't approve, but I trust you, Eddie."
She looked deep into my eyes as she said,
"I know your heart. I suppose it'll be okay. It's just a few nights."
Whew. I breathed a big sigh of relief. I ran up to my bedroom, opened the window, and heaved the duffel bag I had stolen from the barn up onto the windowsill. It held nearly everything I owned, along with a few things that I didn't, crammed in every pocket and corner. I pushed it over the edge, hoping that it wouldn't make much noise when it hit the ground.
"Goodbye, dear,"
Grandma said as the Ashtons pulled up in their Continental. I was surprised nobody asked me why I didn't just walk like I had 100 times before. While Grandma made small talk with Mrs. Ashton, Taylor opened the passenger door and helped me load in the duffel bag. I felt like I had finally escaped. Mr. Ashton was away on another short business trip, so Taylor and I turned our attention to treating his mother like royalty. We made her breakfast, we took out the garbage, we even vacuumed the rugs and did the dishes without being asked. All the while, we watched her like a hawk, waiting until she was in the perfect mood. Not surprisingly, it came 2 days later, at about 4 o'clock in the afternoon. Mrs. Ashton was watching television, a smile on her face, and the crystal tumbler in her hand. That's when we made our approach.
"Mom," Taylor began, "Eddie and I want to talk to you about something."
"Of course,"
she replied, never taking her eyes off the television.
"What is it?"
Taylor looked at me. I had the stage now. I couldn't even count how many times I had rehearsed what I was about to say. I steadied my voice.
"Janice, my grandparents are miserable and so am I."
She stopped watching the television and turned to face me. I had her attention now.
"They're just too old to really understand me," I continued. "Plus, I feel bad because Grandma just wants peace and quiet, and I'm nothing but a burden to them both."
"Oh, Eddie, I'm sure that's not true."
"It is, Janice. Believe me. I've tried everything, but we just don't see eye to eye anymore. I think all three of us would be much happier if I could just come and live with you guys for a while. My grandparents would be fine with it. In fact, they may not admit it, but I think they secretly are hoping that I would ask you."
It wasn't hard to sell any of this because I truly believed it. I had closed down my emotional attachments for so long that I honestly thought my grandparents would be thrilled if I left. They could get on with their lives, and I could get on with mine. Besides, I knew what I wanted to do and where I was going, and that didn't include being stuck on a farm. Mrs. Ashton's eyes narrowed.
"Well, Eddie, if your grandparents really are okay with it, then so am I, but I'll have to talk about it with Stan when he gets home tomorrow."
I nodded my head and looked over at Taylor. It took every ounce of self-control I had left not to smile. The next day marked the 3rd day since I had left. I knew that my grandfather would soon be back from his trip. When he found out that I'd been gone for so long, he'd call the Ashtons, or worse, he'd come right to their house. Mr. Ashton had gotten home earlier that morning, and now Taylor and I were standing in front of both of his parents in the living room.
"Eddie," Mrs. Ashton said softly, "we understand, and we're more than happy to have you here, but
We're going to have to make some arrangements. You and Taylor go find something to do while Stan and I try to figure something out.
Are you ready to have a new brother? I said smugly to Taylor after his parents left the room. For longer than I could remember, I had been looking forward to this moment as the time I would finally be happy. So why did I feel like I felt when I had opened the sweater on Christmas morning? We're all made up of two parts. There's a part that thinks, and there's the part that feels. That was a problem. I felt great, but the thinking part of me knew I wasn't going to get what I expected. I was most likely going to get what I deserved. After lunch, Mr. Ashton told us to get ready to go for a drive. I need to go to the store for your mom, Taylor. Why don't you and Eddie come along? We'll stop for a treat. We got into the Lincoln, pulled out onto the road, and drove past Russell's farm. As usual, it looked abandoned. It wasn't long before my grandparents' house came into view, and as we approached, I slouched down into my seat and hoped they weren't looking out the window. I had a new life now. "What are you doing?" I yelled as Mr. Ashton turned into the driveway by my grandfather's old plow and pulled up to the house. My grandmother's silhouette appeared and became sharper as we approached. "Eddie, Janice and I came over here last night and spent nearly 2 hours with your grandparents. They don't see things quite the same way that you do. I know it's hard to believe, but it's best for you to be here with them right now." For a moment, I considered bracing my legs against the front seat and refusing to get out of the car. I'd been betrayed. They'd hurt me. I felt as if a knife was working in a circle around my heart, twisting inside my chest and making me want to scream for help. I couldn't believe the Ashtons and my grandparents conspired against me. It bruised my pride that I'd been so stupid that I hadn't even seen it coming. I sat in the back seat, angry, empty, and confused. My left side was warm from the heater, but the open door sent chills down my arm and leg. My side hurt, my eyes burned. I fought back the tears like I had never fought anything in my life. Mr. Ashton stood next to me, patiently holding the front passenger seat down so I could get out. Taylor sat next to me, looking straight down at the floor. I wondered if he had betrayed me, too. A dozen crude, hateful things passed through my mind, but I said none of them. In fact, for the next 24 hours, I said nothing at all.
"Eddie, please, just talk to us."
Grandma repeated her speech about how much they loved me, and how the Ashtons loved me, too. They were hurt and disappointed, but most of all, I think they were just confused. They couldn't understand how I could possibly think they'd be happier if I left. My grandfather seemed a little softer than he had been before I left, but he didn't openly gush like Grandma. It went unsaid at the time, but Grandpa knew exactly who Stan Ashton really was. The big city guy that Grandpa would have made pay to take his wood and windows away. "Christmas is coming," he told me later that night, clearly hoping that we could put the past where it belonged. "What do you say we just enjoy it and start off the new year with a fresh look at things?"
"Start fresh?"
I asked incredulously. Grandpa had unwittingly bent my sadness into pent-up anger that pushed its way into my face, turning it bright red.
"Start fresh? Are you going to bring Mom and Dad back to life? Are you going to give me a life like other kids have, like Taylor has? You think I'm just supposed to forget everything that's happened?"
"Not forget, Eddie. Forgive. You don't have to move past it, but you do have to move through it. Most of the slop you're wallowing in is of your own making.
You keep talking to me like it's going to make a difference. I'm 13 years old, and my life is already over."
My grandmother stepped between us.
"Eddie, you're right. We're too old to have a teenager, but we're trying really hard. We've seen a lot, and we've been through a lot. We know that things will get easier. You just have to stick it out for a while."
I stood and pulled my fists from my jean pockets.
"Right!"
I mustered as much pain and anger as I possibly could into my gaze. I turned to my grandfather, but my stare was no match for his.
You don't want me here, and I don't want to be here. Now, thanks to you, my only friend doesn't want me either.
I spun on my heels and flew into my room, slamming the door so hard that one of Grandma's pictures fell from the wall in the hallway. It was the picture of my mother. Less than a minute later, my door opened again and my grandfather stood there carrying the duffel bag I had used in my escape. I barely had been able to drag it along the ground, yet he easily lifted it with one hand, stood it on its end, and rested his palm on it as he faced me. "Sit down, Eddie." I sat on my bed and tilted my head way back to look up at him.
"This nonsense stops tonight. I have dried more of your grandmother's tears in the last year than in all of our other years together combined.
Last night, she told me that she wished she had died instead of your mom. You think the world is against you. You know what? Even if that were true, it wouldn't give you an excuse to treat people the way you do. You're here because we're family. You don't use family."
"I don't have any family," I snapped back at him. "As far as I'm concerned, my family is dead."
If we were really all God's children, then I wanted to hurt one of his. Just like he had hurt me, the darkness just started to tighten all around me. The expression on my grandfather's face completely changed. The number of strained creases stayed the same, but they changed direction as controlled anger turned into deep pain.
"Don't say that. Don't ever say that. You are everything to us. You are everything to your parents. Eddie, you choose your own path in life. You've had a hard road, and there have been some wrong turns, but you'll find your way, and we will be there to help you at every turn."
His words were welcome, but they brought me no comfort. In that moment, I realized my stubbornness was more powerful than his kindness. This was going to be one game that Grandpa was finally going to lose, because now I was the one with the system. I already knew how this game was going to end. On Friday, I went through all of my things. I jammed as much as I could into my knapsack, and I hid it inside the closet. The three of us spent that evening quietly staying out of each other's way.
"Tomorrow's Christmas Eve, Eddie. You must be at least a little excited," Grandma said, trying to break the ice over dinner. "The weatherman says it might even finally snow."
"Sure it will," I thought. "It never snows here anymore." I said nothing. A few hours later, I decided to sneak downstairs to watch television. I didn't know when I would have another chance to watch John.